You guys know the name Zach Kaur? Does that name mean anything?
I do not.
Inside linebackers coach for the Patriots, and their defensive coordinator, Terrell Williams, could not do it because of health. They said, Zach Kaur, you're the play caller tonight. Zach Kaur called the game last night as a young defensive assistant and was amazing. They had one play of 10 yards or more.
Yeah.
They went 1-for-10 on third down. And I know everyone's going to talk about the offensive line. That offense that we saw from the Chargers was completely flummoxed throughout the game.
The offense was flummoxed for the Chargers. The defense was rolling. But the Chargers were confused, kind of like I was. TED Talk was brought to you by Boston Prolotherapy. If joint pain has you riding the bench, do what TED did. Eliminate your joint pain with Dr. Franke of Boston Prolotherapy. Online at bostonprolotherapy.com.
It works, Andy. It's so simple, and it works. And Dr. Al is the best. He's absolutely the best. And like I've said before, if he can't help you, when you call for your free consultation, he will tell you where you need to go to get the help you need. Not a lot of doctors will do that.
Yeah. That faith, that trust is actually almost more important than the treatment. Yeah. Than, like, you know, like not getting taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. Oh, at the end, it didn't work. But thank you for paying us. You know what I mean? Like, just having faith in somebody to be honest with you whether it'll work or not. That's awesome. Also awesome is Zach Kaur. And you heard right there, that was Pete Schrager on ESPN actually last night. But listening to that, Fitzy, and I don't know if you picked up on it there, they're like, and Zach Kaur, this unknown guy, had to call plays last night against the He's been calling plays since September. This is not anything new. Zach Kaur has been the play caller for the New England Patriots for the bulk of the season. And I don't, we were just talking about it off air. It doesn't get a lot of press, seemingly, certainly not nationally. This is Drake May.
Vrabel's getting all the press, right. Plus Drake May, yeah.
But now it's time for Zach Kaur to get some love, and Pete Schrager is starting to, you know, figure out the story on ESPN. But Zach Kaur was awesome on Sunday night. And, you know, I jokingly said to Dan Ball, maybe we should see if we can get him, even though he's not a coordinator, maybe get him in the coordinator rotation here late in the year to talk to him, because he's doing just a phenomenal job. And I obviously, we don't know exactly, Ted, what the setup is, the game planning, the play calling, the play sheet. We know he's calling the plays.
I think that's by design.
Right. But how do we get to that point? If you remember when Bill was doing all the stupid stuff about the play calling with Judge and Patricia, and he's like, you ask him about the play call or the game planning? Because those are two different things. And, you know, the play call is one thing. That's easy. The guy who called. And he turned it into this whole, like, fiasco, basically. But there's some truth to it, right? Like, Tuesday into Wednesday, when you're putting the game plan together, that can be Vrabel, that can be Kaur,
that's everybody putting their input.
Terrell Williams, when he's been in the building, they've talked about he has visited at times. So
yeah, we don't know what I would love to know exactly. Is he zooming in? Is he does he come by? Does he give his does he lay out sort of like a godfatherly overview of how he thinks the defense should attack the upcoming opponent, and then Zach does the fine war planning, if you will?
I don't know if it's just specific. They're not talking about that because it's specifically a unique situation. I don't think anybody wants to tell you exactly how they come up with their game plans, but I think we'd all like to know how much credit we should be giving this guy.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting that I didn't think it was until this last game. Maybe because it was the defense's best performance of the season. I think it was. And I mean, if you look at the numbers, and it probably would suggest it was, that Mike really gave Zach Kaur, like, the flowers he deserved. I mean, I wonder why he's been hesitant and not really willing to do that until this game. But part of it might be designed so that we can't really focus in on who to blame if things go bad, or when Terrell Williams comes back next year and things go bad. You can just say, well, last year we didn't really know whose job it was to put the defense together. We just know Zach Kaur called the plays, but there was a lot of guys that were involved in the game planning the week leading up to games.
Right. There's a little Belichickian to it. If you don't know what's going on, you can't really criticize or praise or specify, right? In the end, it's Vrabel's team, right? So it all falls on his lap. Mm-hmm. But I did think it was interesting. Post game, he did say something to the effect like, Zach should get all the credit he is getting or will get or something to that effect, which has been kind of quiet over the course of the season. But, you know, it could be, as you said, protect him from struggles, because when it goes bad, if you haven't praised him when it's going good, then you're probably not going to rip him when it's going bad, right?
Correct. Yep.
And then the other thing is, I just said this to you off air. So we've been talking about Jaylen Brown taking over the Celtics. What's it going to be like when JT comes back? it's a similar situation in a coaching way. Like, Zach Kaur was just going to coach the inside linebackers. Now he's calling plays on game day against Justin Herbert, and everybody's saying it was so creative that no one knew what the hell they were doing. And then Terrell Williams comes back, and no disrespect to you, but all he does is go back to talking to Robert Spillane in between plays. Like, he's not calling. You know, like, that's a weird world that could come together.
I would not be have a problem with it. I don't know how many people are out there listening right now that when I say, you know, someone above them gets fired, and then they got to take on the work of the person that got fired, but they don't get paid to reflect that those new responsibilities. So I don't know. It, to me, for Zach, if I'm him and I'm looking for a job down the road, I'm using this as my, hey, look what I did with that Patriots defense. So I think it's still a feather in his cap, even though he's not getting the credit outwardly. I think he'll still use it to his advantage, you know, personally and professionally.
So just to clarify, because maybe Pete Schrager's not the only one. Maybe some Patriots fans aren't totally familiar. The 508 said, he is the coordinator. What do you mean? He's calling plays every second. What are you talking about?
Not by title.
He does not have the title of coordinator. Terrell Williams was and is technically the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. The veteran, former defensive line coach, was brought on with Mike Vrabel to do that job. He is now dealing with cancer, has been away from the team for most of the season, and Zach Kaur has been given the duty of play caller. Doesn't make you the coordinator. That title comes with money and responsibility, yep. and then you're one step away from being a head coach. Like, he's doing a great job as he's sort of the interim play caller, the interim defensive coordinator, whatever you want to call it. But he's done a great job. I did put a poll up today, guys, at WEEI Afternoons, at Jumbo Heart. I said simply, who is the MVP of Sunday's Patriots wild card win over the Chargers? I said, reply if you don't like these four choices. You can give me something else. But I said, Milton Williams, Ramondre Stevenson, Marcus Jones, Zach Kaur. And you know who's winning?
Who's that?
Zach Kaur. It's tight. 33% for the play caller, 31% for Milton Williams, the stud defensive lineman, 29% for Ramondre Stevenson, who I also thought his run off the goal line after the stand, the catch and run to go from the 2 to the 50 was
that
huge.
48 yards.
Flipping the field there to change everything.
Yep.
And then Marcus Jones. Fitzy, that damn tackle on the 2 yard line, the sack he had, the forced fumble, he did everything in that game. Mm-hmm. He's getting 7% of the vote. Who are you people?
Well, you break up my guy Ladd McConkey, you wag a finger, and you only get 7%. Come on now, people. Marcus Jones, top defenseman for the Patriots.
So the Patriots defense was really good, and we're going to figure out just how good moving forward. Can they string these together? One team we don't need to prove itself is the Texans. The Texans are coming to town. The Texans defense under D'Amico Ryans is awesome. Mark Schlereth said it, best defense in the NFL. They get after it up front. If you watch that game last night, they had a big in scoring a big man touchdown late. They have interceptions. But most notably, Ted, I think it all starts for them with Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, and those guys coming off the edge, putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. So, interesting. We just saw Will Campbell and the offensive line have their worst game of the year. Are we accepting that? Was that their worst game of the year on the offensive line, Ted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
So, coming off their worst game of the year, they're facing their biggest test of the year, right?
Yeah, I was going to say maybe the Browns game was one of their worst, but it ranks in the top two or three.
Okay.
Worst. Yeah. So they're going to be tested.
Yes.
And they'll be tested over and over and over again, and specifically, do not be in third and long situations.
Because, that was an issue last night for the Steelers and the old man at
there
quarterback.
Yeah.
Poor Rodgers. God, they just took it to him last night.
So that's where I want to take this discussion, because we're just going to be simple-minded, right, in the matchup. It's five guys versus their four or five guys on the front. It's can Will Campbell block Danielle Hunter? Can Will Campbell block Will Anderson? But there's a lot more that goes into it, right? You just talked about it. If you get 4 yards on first down on a run to Ramondre Stevenson, you've taken a nice first step, right, towards helping those guys.
Correct.
If you are running screen passes, if you're getting rid of the ball quickly, if Steph Diggs and Pop Douglas and whoever else is running some routes where they are uncovering, as they say, quickly, it's not all just about Will Campbell and Drake May, right? There's a lot, and, you know, Schlereth put it all more on Josh McDaniels, that this matchup is actually mostly about Josh McDaniels and figuring out a way to deal with that pass rush. Is that fair?
Yeah, though that's very, very fair. So he's going to have to come up with ways. And it's, you know, you say, I've heard people say that, you know, you get to this point in the playoffs, it's not about scheming or plays, it's about players, which it is. However, when you have clear deficiencies or flaws, you have to scheme up, I think, a good game plan, Fitzy, to kind of negate the strengths that are going against your perceived weakness. So I think it's a very big game for Josh. How do you slow down a pass rush like that? Typically, it's a lot of screens and draws and creative horizontal passing plays to get the ball out fast, that kind of stuff. So it is about players at this time of the year, but it also, let's face it, you need to scheme up a hell of a game as well.
Yeah, Zach Kaur is the name that gets all the love for Sunday's effort, but it's got to be Josh McDaniels, followed closely by Doug Marrone this coming Sunday. Everybody get ready to ache, to hurt, to be bruised, to be as dinged up as you can remember. Like, there's no way you go up against Stingley and Pollock and Petre and Anderson and Hunter and these guys that are looking to wreck you and end you and make a statistic and a highlight of you on each and every play and not feel it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So Josh is going to have to do some work. And you know who's going to be, guys, we're going to be paying tribute to the Munfords and the Westovers and maybe, oh boy, can we get Tonga back for this one? Because they're going to need him. If they think they're going to get that extra yard when they need it most, Tonga to the rescue, hopefully.
So the Texans defense last night put together one of their those SID numbers that Dan Ball likes to put in the rundown. The Texans against the Steelers last night are the first defense ever to allow 175 yards or fewer, two third down conversions or fewer, and score two defensive touchdowns in a playoff game.
That's a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Against a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame coach, maybe, if you think.
Correct.
That guy on the other sideline, even though he's out of work now. And what I thought was kind of funny, because it was a dogfight, if you didn't watch, it was 7-6 in the fourth quarter. It's almost like they said, hell, we'll do it ourselves. We'll just score. We'll get the ball for you. CJ, stop making mistakes. We're just going to score, and then it ends up 30-6. But we've been talking about this matchup, I feel like, for like 6 weeks. We were, as we started to say, are they going to make the playoffs? Who do you want to see? Who do you definitely not want to see? And this was the not want to see.
Okay. And I was one of those guys. I did not want to face them if you could help it, the Texans, because of their defense. However.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. That was then. This is now. I'm better with this matchup now. Why? Why, Ted? Why now? Because the defense just played its best football it's played all season long against the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
Defense is momentum. It's confidence. It's showing you can do it. And then feeling like you go out there and you can do it again and repeat the same effort the following week. So that gives me a lot of confidence. They're going to have the confidence to carry it over into this week. And plus, the Texans, I don't know how many miles it is from Houston to Pittsburgh, but it's a long way. It's 2,000, over 2,000 miles. They had to fly all the way back to Houston. They had to turn around and fly all the way back up here to Boston, which is further than Pittsburgh. That takes something out of you.
On a short week.
So the external factors that I talked about last week being a factor for the Chargers, the cold weather, et cetera, I will say the same thing for the Texans this week.
So
I like them better in the matchup this week as I would have last week.
There's a little bit of me that wants to call you a homer because you're making it suit the situational needs of being pro-Patriot this week. But you know what I actually think is you talk about momentum. Defense is absolutely momentum, and the Patriots' defense has some momentum, and they have reason to believe that can continue, because if they watched last night's game, C.J. Stroud looked bad. Yeah. He might have looked worse than Herbert did against you. The fumbles.
How'd he do with
like,
the elements? How'd he do with the cold weather?
Not great. So, not great.
Dome quarterback.
Didn't feel comfy. And also, guys, might not have his favorite target. If his Binky is out on Sunday, his best, most dynamic receiver.
Oh, that's huge.
Advantage Patriots.
But Fitzy, it's interesting. But is it a wash if our best corner isn't playing?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, but the difference is, and I know you'll go, what, one day matters? But in concussion protocol, a day can matter.
No doubt.
I think this is an issue for the NFL. This is the Texans getting screwed. This is, wait, their guy's going to make it back because they got to play on Sunday.
Great point. Our guy
won't. Like, if this game were next Monday, and I don't know how it'll play out with Nico Collins and the concussion protocol, but if he comes down to, like, basically a one-day issue – and they get screwed. Now, here's where I'm cynical. I don't think they'll let that happen. I think they'll screw the protocol because, you know, they care about head injuries and protocols when it looks good, when it suits them.
Yeah.
But if they want their stars on the field, do they finesse it and say, ah, you know what? Don't worry about the last day of the protocol. Get out there. But this whole scheduling thing where you got Saturday, Sunday, and Monday in a short week, and it's part of the travel, too. But more importantly, it's part of if Nico Collins can't play, but he would have played if you had played it 7 days later instead of six, that's a bad look for the NFL. It would be a very good look for the New England Patriots because I think Nico Collins is one of the most physical receivers in the NFL.
Oh, he's a monster. But wait a second. I just want to say, yesterday I asked you if it was fair that San Francisco would have to play such a physical game late in the Sunday window and then have to turn around and play Saturday. And you said, suck it up. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, no. And I do feel that way.
Convenient narrative twisting, Hart.
I feel that way a little bit if you just say, you know, it's a day of rest. But if you tell the teams, listen, we have a 7-day protocol for concussions. You got to do these steps through 7 days, and then you go, well, you get a game 6 days later, so good luck with the 7-day protocol. I mean, no,
it's unfair. That's why I think, Andy, I would not be surprised, Ted, this offseason, in addition to sayonara tush push, I would not be surprised if there's, okay, going forward, there'll be 3 games Saturday, 3 games Sunday, super wild card weekend. And then if you played Saturday, you'll play Saturday. If you play Sunday, you'll play Sunday. And then we just have champ Sunday for everyone.
Yeah, I don't know about that because they care too much about the TV matchups and the money. Like, for example, the Patriots game, everybody seems to indicate if the Steelers had won, Patriots-Steelers would have been the 6 o'clock game, would have been the late game.
Correct. 1,010%. By the way, who is the carrying network, Andy, for 3 o'clock Sunday?
I don't actually know the answer.
It's ESPN.
It's on ESPN.
Yep. All my boys down in Houston were worried that it was going to be another CBS game, which they are not fans of Tony Romo down there.
I don't think anybody's fans of Tony Romo these days.
Is he that bad?
They're talking about him being demoted and whether the CBS would do that to bump up
J.J. Watt
and his partner to chair. Yeah. No, Romo's been
Ian
bad.
Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt had a great season.
And people are calling out Romo. I forgot where I read it, but one of those media critics in like New York wrote a whole column like he seems lazy, like he doesn't prepare, like he's not ready for the broadcast, and he's not good. He really is not good.
He got his money and just said, I'm good.
I'm fat and happy.
Fat and happy boy.
He's making $17 million a year to not really say a whole hell of a lot on the airwaves. But, Patriots will play the 3 o'clock game on Sunday, Gillette Stadium, against the Texans.
I love that time slot, by the way.
Perfect. Okay, why?
I mean, I would rather it be a little smidge later. I just think one's too early. I just think that 3 o'clock window is such a fun time to watch and to play. I think
they'll have half in the sunlight and half in the darkness.
Yeah, I love the idea of starting a game in the sun and then ending it with under the lights.
And you'll also be at your best based on that, what did we have, that study last week where 4 to 7, I think, was your best. So you can play the first hour of the game, kind of work the kinks out, and then boom. Once the game hits the declares itself, you're ready to roll.
And then it's perfect for Chicago because they're saying with snow and potential wind, it might feel like it's -30. Yeah.
See, can they finally deliver on one of these, though? Last week I was told it would be a weather game, and it wasn't really the kind of weather game I wanted it to
be. Bones are aching just thinking about how cold it's going to be. We'll see if Mr. Likely MVP is able to perform in those conditions.
Yeah, the old man. See if his bones hurt and he can't figure it out. Of course, on the other side, you got a guy that some people think is soft as puppy poo in Caleb Williams, sort of a California
quarterback. What's that guy done for Chicago recently, huh?
Yeah, no, he's on a bit of a roll, but you got to finish the deal. He can't do it one game. 617-779-7937. We're going to continue to talk about it, but the matchup of the week clearly is Texans pass rush versus the Patriots pass protection, but also the scheme of Josh McDaniels and how they work around whatever weaknesses they have on the line. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, maybe we can delve into that because our weekly chat with Brian Hoyer, he's a quarterback. He knows a little something about pass rushes and schemes and all those things. Also want to get his thoughts on the idea that Justin Herbert and the Chargers had no idea what the Patriots defense was doing in coverage on Sunday night. Brian Hoyer here on WEEI Afternoons up next.